All right, guys, I'd like for you to turn in your Bibles to Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 6. We're going to continue on. We've seen some very interesting things through the first five chapters. We've seen the things that Jesus can do, even to the point of raising someone from the dead. We've seen his interaction with folks and how he responds to faith, even just simple faith. But we've also seen, and Mark is making this point, he's making the point of the reality of what happens when you don't believe, when you don't trust in him, when you don't look to him for the things that you're going through. And we're going to see that today. As we get into chapter 6, we've just seen him have the interaction with the synagogue ruler, the ruler's daughter who was sick, and he asked Jesus to come and heal his daughter. Jesus said, I'll go. But on the way, another woman who's had a problem for about 12 years stops him. Not that she intentionally wanted to, but she touched him because she believed if I touched him, I would be healed. And she gets healed, and then Jesus wants to know who touched him. And that delay creates the problem where the little girl dies, and you see the unbelief there where they come and tell the ruler, your daughter has died, don't bother the teacher anymore. And of course we see Jesus go and heal her. That brings us now to chapter 6. Because there's all these exciting things going on, and John has made the point of letting us know that everywhere in that northern part of Israel, in the Galilee area, even beyond, the fame of Jesus has gone out and everybody wants to come to him. Well, we're going to see him go back to his hometown. And we're going to see the response. It's familiar, some of the things Jesus says here. But what we're going to see is we're going to see what really is the contrast that is true for us in our everyday lives. We're going to see the contrast of people who just don't want to believe with those who do believe and what they're called to. We're going to see this contrast. So let's take a look at the passage together. We're going to look at verses 1 through 13 in Mark chapter 6. Here's what Mark records. He went away from there and came to his hometown, and his disciples followed him. And on the Sabbath he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astonished, saying, where did this man get these things? What is the wisdom given to him? How are such mighty works done by his hand? Is this not the carpenter, the son of Mary, and brother of James, and Joseph, and Judas, and Simon? And are not his sisters here among us? And they took offense at him. And Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown, and among his relatives and in his own household. And he could do no mighty works there except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief. And he went about among the villages teaching. And he called the 12 and began to send them out two by two and gave them authority over unclean spirits. He charged them to take nothing for their journey except a staff, no bread, no bag, no money in their belts, but to wear sandals and not to put on two tunics. And he said to them, whenever you enter a house, stay there until you depart from there. And if any place will not receive you, and they will not listen to you, when you leave, shake off the dust that is on your feet as a testimony against them. So that they went out and proclaimed that people should repent, and they cast out many demons and anointed with oil many who were sick and healed them. All right, folks, we're going to break this down into two sections. We're going to look at, first of all, the issue of unbelief. How do you get there? And then we're going to look at the issue of commitment. Okay? Unbelief and commitment. Now, Jesus has an interesting experience when we look at the first part here with the issue of unbelief. And it's actually an experience that a lot of folks actually have when you realize it, if you just thought about it for a moment. So here he is, he's doing all these great things in every other part of northern Israel. But then when he goes back to his hometown, he's just Jesus. You ever had that experience? I was telling that about Lori. I had a discussion with Lori because we've been going down to the home area a little bit here since January when my mother-in-law died and helping with my father-in-law. And it struck me that, you know, here I am. I'm Pastor George in the community. I've been here 25 years. And a lot of people will, the ones who call me pastor don't go to our church, okay? But they'll say, Pastor Cannon. And so I have some sort of a presence here because of the position I hold. Well, when I go back to Indiana County, I'm just George, Lori's husband. Now, that's pretty humbling, but that's true. I'm just George. Doesn't matter what I do. Doesn't matter who I am. Doesn't matter that I've been pastoring for 20. They don't care about that. I'm just George. I'm always going to be, are you ready for this, just George. And that's a humbling thing. Here's Jesus. He's having this experience. He's got the same kind of thing going on. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? You accomplish something at work. You're a big guy. You're a big shot or whatever. And then when you get around your own, they're like, oh, it's just you. Nobody cares what you do. This is the same thing he's going through. But there's something a little bit deeper here. It's unbelief. In Jesus' case, it's unbelief. So I just want to point out four things for you here, okay? Four things about the unbelief. Number one, they could not bring themselves to believe what he could do. They couldn't believe what he could do. They just couldn't bring themselves to do it. Now, you got to remember, you got to understand what's going on here, okay? Anybody know how old Jesus was when he began his ministry? Anybody? 30 years old. So for 30 years, he lived in their community. We really don't know that he did any miracles up to, maybe he did, but we know from John when he talks about the wedding at Cana, that's where he did his, first miracle, turning the water into wine. So for the most part, Jesus lived his life basically in obscurity in a small village of Nazareth. And people interacted with him. He was the oldest of Mary and Joseph's children. And they really just knew him as Jesus. Now, Jesus goes out and he's got this ministry now. People are coming and being healed. People are having demons cast out of them. People are even being raised from the dead. And these stories are getting back to the hometown. Man, did you hear about Jesus? Do you hear? And they just really can't believe that because they say, isn't this the carpenter? Isn't this the carpenter? So it kind of lets you know what Jesus kind of did. He followed in, of course, Joseph's footsteps and served as a carpenter. And they couldn't bring themselves to believe. Why? Well, the text goes on. If you look at verse 3, they believed they knew everything about him. Look at what it says in verse 3. I think it's interesting. Look at what it says there. Is this not the carpenter, son of Mary, and brother of James, Joseph, and Judas, and Simon? And are not his sisters here among us? And they took offense at him. They thought they already knew everything about him. But they didn't. But you couldn't tell them that. They already knew everything about him, right? Have you ever done that? You thought you interacted with somebody so much you knew everything about them until one day you're kind of surprised that there's something you didn't know about them? Yeah, it happens a lot, even in our marriages, right? We think we know our spouse, then something comes up and we realize, oh, wow, I didn't know that they could do that or they said that or whatever, right? These folks thought they knew everything about him. We have his brothers among us. His when it says that the sisters are among us, that means they've married into the families around there. They think they know everything about Jesus, but they don't. But they believe that they knew everything about him. And then when you look at that last part of verse 3, you kind of have to say, are you kidding me? It says they took offense. And that's the point I want you to see here, is they took offense at Jesus. They got mad at him. Like, why would you get mad at him? I don't understand that one, do you? They got offended. Because Jesus is acting in a way beyond what they're doing, what they believe about him. Now, when you take these three things, okay, these first three things, that's really where unbelief is. If you look at it, when you look at it, they thought they couldn't bring themselves to believe that he could do these things. Number two, they thought they knew everything about him. And then third thing here, they take offense at him. Like, who is he? That's unbelief, isn't it? I mean, you could take those three things and look at a lot of different people today who have no time for Jesus, who couldn't care less about Jesus, have no time for God, and you could almost, it almost fits exactly what's going on here. Number one, they think that, first of all, they know everything about him, so therefore they can't bring themselves to believe in him. And then they get offended. Have you ever interacted with somebody who didn't believe and really when you bring up God, they almost get angry. And it's like, where did that come from? It's because they took offense at God. Because they've already determined in their mind maybe that there is no God or he can't do anything. This is the issue of unbelief. But it has implications. What do you mean? So there's a fourth point I want you to see out of this. The fourth point is this. I want you to look with me at verses 5 and 6. Look at what it says here. I think this is really interesting. And he could do no mighty work there except that he laid hands on a few sick people and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief. Here's the last thing I want you to see about this issue of unbelief. Their unbelief hindered what God could do. Their unbelief hindered what God could do. See, there's a tie-in here. Mark makes the tie-in. I want you to see it. If you look at all of these miracles that are taking place, there's always the issue of what? Faith, faith, faith. Even as we move forward, we're going to see a guy that wants Jesus to do something. And Jesus is saying, hey, just have faith. And the guy says, I believe, but help my unbelief. The issue is faith. And faith allows, is that vehicle that God uses in our lives to bring about what he wants to do. But when you're talking about people who don't believe, who don't want to believe, why would God do anything? There's no expectation there. There's actually, can I be honest with you, because we're talking about unbelievers here. There's actually a warning for you and I here as well. Because it's good for us to say, I can believe that God can do anything. I think right now if I said that, everybody here would agree with that, right? God can do anything, right? Okay. But there's probably times when you feel like you wonder, right? What are you saying, George? I'm saying if you get realistic, When the rubber meets the road and you're in the midst of some sort of difficulty and crisis, and you've been praying and you just get nothing but silence, and you don't have any wisdom to carry you through this issue, and part of you, maybe it's the fleshy part of you, but there's part of you that says, I don't believe he can handle this one. I don't believe he can get me out of this. The unbelief crops up, the doubt crops up, right? And what I'm trying to say to you is,